Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Man, how life has changed. Friday night, typically, right? So a lot of times on Fridays for the Lakers season, Lakers got a lot of home games on those Friday nights. Fridays and Sundays, typically Lakers got a lot of games. So Friday, just kind of thinking about by the time you walk, you know, you do the pregame show with Michael Thompson, game goes on, Staples Center, just fantastic as always. The electricity in the building, random Kobe Bryant chants, those are, you know, my favorite. Those are the best when you hear those, especially obviously after the tragic loss of the great Kobe and Gianna Bryant, who, by the way, would have turned 14 years old today, and the other seven that lost their lives on January 26th. Then you go, you do the post-game show where our offices are. It's right next to the Congo Room. Congo Room, there's always music playing, so kind of on the way out. The energy that's outside of LA Live, that was a typical Friday night. You know, that was a typical Friday night, and we have not had anything like that in a long time. And it's just it's still kind of surreal, the life that we're living right now. It really is. It's surreal where we are, but this is a reality. Okay, so this is what I was talking about before I went to break. So I want to give you guys a list of quarterbacks that started week one after being drafted. Okay, and by the way, I'm not saying that if the Chargers started Justin Herbert out of Oregon, number six pick, went to the Chargers. If they started him right out of the gate, I'm not saying the world's going to end. But I want to make a case here of why I don't think Justin Herbert should start. And Tyrod Taylor, who I was spending a lot of time like, this is how you're going to open up SoFi Stadium. Now I'm going the opposite way because I'm thinking long-term here for the Chargers. So let me explain myself. Quarterbacks that started week one after being drafted. Matt Ryan, Joe Flacco, Matt Stafford, Mark Sanchez, Sam Bradford, Cam Newton, Andy Dalton, Andrew Luck, RG3, Ryan Tannehill, Russell Wilson, Geno Smith, Derek Carr, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota. I'm just naming off, obviously, over the last, let's say, 10 years or so, 10, 12 years or so. Typically, quarterbacks that are starting as rookies, the idea is they want to save their franchise. There's pressure from the GM and the coach like, freaking A, we just got this guy. We got him at a high draft pick. Throw him in there. Throw him in there. Get him in there right now because my job is on the line, and I want to at least get the fan base excited. That's common. If I want to use an NBA example, you know, when D'Angelo went number two or Brandon Ingram went number two or Lonzo went number two, all Laker fans were, play the kids, play the kids. I was the same way. What are you playing for? You don't have anything else that you're playing for. Your team, you know, your team's not good enough to make it to the postseason or make a run. Throw them in there. But I think the Chargers are in a different position. The franchise is not going to be saved anytime soon. It's going to take time. What I mean by it's not going to be saved anytime soon, I'm not talking about wins and losses. I'm really not. The Chargers were 5-11 this past year, 12-4 the year prior. Man, only in the NFL can you have just that difference of a season in just two freaking years. You're 12-4, and the following year you're 5-11. There are actually a lot of NFL people, including Kirk Morrison, Mina Kimes, who I had on the show maybe over a month ago or so. They're DeMarco Favre had this conversation that believe the Chargers can actually be, you know, definitely one of those contending teams in the AFC this year. It's not going to come down to just winning and losing for the Chargers. There's got to be a big picture play. And what I'm talking about there is there's no rush if you're the Chargers. There's no pressure from your fan base if you're the Chargers. I don't want to be mean, but you don't have a fan base. So you don't have to worry about the fan base. What you should be doing is taking your quarterback and just properly training him to eventually hand the keys to him. But I don't think it should be right out of the gate. If Justin Herbert sat this entire first year, his entire rookie year, and Tyrod Taylor got the start for all 16 games, and you know they took their chances with, by the way, a quarterback that's, you know, been in the league for a number of years. It's not like I know we don't know too much about Tyrod Taylor just because hasn't been a household name. But it's, I think, important for Justin Herbert to have. I'm going to throw out these quarterbacks. List of quarterbacks that didn't start out of the gate. Drew Brees didn't start out of the gate. Tom Brady didn't play his first game until the last game of the season. Phillip Rivers sat behind Drew Brees. Aaron Rodgers sat behind Brett Favre. I'm not making any comparisons that those, you know, these Hall of Fame quarterbacks that I'm spitting out, that's going to be Justin Herbert. The point that I'm trying to make is there is no rush if you're the Chargers. Really, honestly, there's no rush if you're the Chargers. What you have to do is think big picture if you're the Chargers. What you have to do if you're the Chargers, you know that there isn't going to be this fan base breathing down your neck saying, start our rookie. That's not going to happen. Maybe it would happen if it was in Green Bay. Maybe it would happen if it was the Los Angeles Rams or if it was the Seattle Seahawks. Some of these just, you know, markets that are just thirsty for NFL and everything they do is based around that one player. I just don't think that's the case for the Chargers. So when I do look at some of these other quarterbacks and I see the position that the Chargers are in, first of all, they probably have more success with Tyrod Taylor in their first year or this year just because he's got more experience. That's number one. And number two, Justin Herbert's your future. You don't have to worry about this year as kind of a make it or break it. Let him learn the process in the NFL. I'm actually a fan of when quarterbacks sit for a year and just get to watch how this process works. What's the from a video perspective, like reviewing all the tape and being that player that figures out, okay, what are the schemes? What are all the plays? I understand the opposing team now. And then you get your crack at it in your second season. I hope that's going to be the case for Justin Herbert. We'll see if that's the case, by the way. But it seems like there's no rush for the Chargers, and that should be the strategy to take, which, by the way, is kind of opposite of what I was saying before. I was saying you got to make a big splash. But I thought the big splash was going to be Tua or was going to be a household name like Cam Newton. Obviously, those two didn't happen. Justin Herbert's going to be their guy. Brandon Cooks being traded three times shows that he's wanted, according to Brandon Cooks. First public comment since he was traded to Houston on April 9th. So we'll jump from the Chargers to the Rams real quick. I just actually wanted to read this off real quick. Here's what Brandon Cooks had to say. The way that I look at it, I take it as a positive that I'm wanted and that I'm valued at a high level. You look at all the trades. They were all for first rounders and then this one going for a second rounder. To be honest with you, I'm blessed to be able to go around and play with so many different teams and different quarterbacks and different organizations. So I don't think of it as a negative. I look forward to it. I'm a guy that adjusts pretty quick. And wherever I go, like I tell people, I'm going to ball. So I'm not worried about that. That's Brandon Cooks, former Los Angeles Ram. I will tell you for the Rams, we'll get into this next week when the NFL schedule looks like it's going to come out May 7th. I think that's the date that's going to come out. And we're probably going to have Kirk Morrison come on again, and we'll talk about, you know, just what that schedule looks like, just like we did for the draft for the Chargers, the Rams, and the Raiders. But I think, you know, with Brandon Cooks, with Todd Gurley, those are two perfect examples. Brandon Cooks' contract was 5 years, $81 million. So probably good for him to go to Houston and go get another, you know, fresh start because that's happened a few different times in his career. But I think great for the Los Angeles Rams that they got picks and then kind of got out of some of that money that they would owe. Okay, so when we come back, I want to give everybody a full background on that meeting today with the Board of Governors. So Sage Steele was on SportsCenter. She gave a full background. And then there's a little bit more information on these training facilities, what facilities can be open, and what it looks like for the near future. This is kind of a tough one. If you're Laker fans, I don't know if you're going to be crazy to hear some of the teams that will have access to gyms, some of them that won't, but I got to figure there's going to be some type of resolution coming because you can't have some teams have it and other teams not have it. So we'll do that all when we come back. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Okay, so the NBA Board of Governors met today, and Sage Steele, who was obviously on SportsCenter, having a conversation with Adrian Wojnarowski before their conversation. She gave a great breakdown on the meeting that went on today, and there's many different levels. So here's Sage Steele on SportsCenter.
There's an excellent article currently posted on ESPN.com by our Adrian Wojnarowski, and it goes into a lot of detail about the immediate and long-term future of the NBA as it navigates through the COVID-19 pandemic. Here are some of the key points. Most high-level officials around the league remain confident basketball will return this season. You just saw Commissioner Adam Silver there. He has consistently assured teams he remains determined to crown a champion from this season. League is also reportedly considering Las Vegas's MGM Grand and Disney's Wide World of Sports in Orlando as potential venues for the season to resume. Both locations have basketball facilities and hotels as the league searches for a city to safely quarantine players and let them play. Sources say one of the most important variables is the league needing upwards of 15,000 coronavirus tests from the reopening of the season to the end. Several manufacturers can assure the league those tests, but they cannot guarantee the American public will have its needs met. Certainly that's important. And looking ahead, there's also support for the league delaying the start of this 2020-2021 season until December and extending it through late July or August of next year. That's something a lot of fans have wanted for a long time anyway. So very, very interesting.
Okay, that's Sage Steele right there. Think about everything that they just broke down. So in this Board of Governors meeting, it's all about the future of the NBA. Confident basketball will return. That's the message that Adam Silver continues to convey, at least behind the scenes. But we'll have to wait and see. There's obviously no answers on that. MGM Orlando, the potential venues that they're looking at. The New York Times had an article, and I'm going to work on getting Kevin Draper, who wrote the article, and basically just says wild ideas to bring back sports might say more about cities than leagues. MGM Resorts International in hard hit Las Vegas has proposed audacious plans to the leagues to come back in a quarantined environment. So I know there's going to continue to be more details of these scenarios that play out, and you heard that there is some concern about doing it in a bubble. You know, this, I think the Walt Disney one is more of a bubble idea. So I don't think that will, that flies with some of the players. And we know some players have expressed their concerns, not just, by the way, in the NBA, but they've expressed concerns for Major League Baseball and everything else. Okay. So this is the one thing that I think continues to be a conversation. NBA is allowing its teams to open training facilities for highly regulated, sanitized individual workouts for players beginning on May 8th. There's some good to this and there's some bad to this. The good is it'd be great to have teams under all these different rules. If you guys remember, the rules are only four players can be in a gym at the same time. You know, the way they have these gyms, there's always four hoops. So you got one player that basically has his own half court and is working on his shots, getting some drills in. There can't be any coaches, so it's not like you're going to have head coaches there or assistant coaches or anything like that. There must be 12 feet separation. They have to go through this whole process of sanitizing. So there's a lot of factors that go into it. That's not the problem. That's all good news. But I'm going to list off some teams here. The Suns, Nuggets, Magic, Hawks, Pacers, T-Wolves, Hornets, Cavs, Thunder, Sixers, Grizzlies, Rockets, Mavs, Spurs, and Jazz all live in states where stay-at-home orders will expire on or before May 8th. The Lakers, Clippers, Kings, Warriors, Wizards, Bulls, Pelicans, Celtics, Pistons, Knicks, Nets, Raptors, Blazers, Bucks, and Heat are the teams located in cities where states are located in cities or states where lockdowns will still be in effect. So the problem I have, and I mentioned this a couple days ago, and we're getting more details on this right now, how can you have some teams have the ability to be in their gym and other teams not have that ability? And if you think of the teams that I named off that are in cities or states where lockdowns will still be in effect, I'll name off all the playoff teams. The Lakers are in one of those cities. The Clippers, the Pelicans are sort of still competing. The Celtics are one of those teams. The Nets are one of those teams. The Raptors, the Bucks, the Miami Heat. I mean, you got half of the teams that would be in playoff contention that won't get that opportunity to, you know, get back into the gym. Sources say all four of the league's California teams, Lakers, Clippers, Warriors, and Kings, are hoping to convince Governor Gavin Newsom to include them in a stage two of his reopening plan, perhaps with the help of the mayors in their respective cities. Rob Palenka and the team's legal counsel lobbied Los Angeles health officials for help in getting their practice facility open. The hope, if he agreed to do so, is that those teams could return to their facilities by the third week in May. I just don't feel like Adam Silver would put some of these teams in a position where, you know, and there is part of this memo, by the way, we'll be contacting teams' general managers to make alternative arrangements. And he's talking about the teams that will not have their facility open. I don't know what alternative arrangements means. I don't know what that's going to refer to for the Lakers. I don't know how that's going to apply to the Lakers. But I will tell you this. As somebody that, you know, had the privilege and the opportunity, like every other Laker fan this year, to see just how fantastic the Lakers were doing, the last thing you want to see is certain teams get a little bit of an edge because their players got their training facility. If there are players on other teams in the Western Conference, the Houston Rockets and the Dallas Mavericks and just other teams that are Utah Jazz are in playoff position, and they could go get an hour and a half in every day or 2 hours every day for a couple weeks extra than when Laker players can, that is a competitive advantage. You don't want to be in a position like that. You also don't want, if you're the league, you don't want to have other teams complaining about that because other fan bases are going to be complaining about that. And then you're going to have, you know, guys like myself who have a platform and I can express my opinion. That's not a good move for the NBA. So hopefully that, today's May 1st. May 8th is when more restrictions will be lifted in some of these states that I'm referring to. Hopefully by then, there's some type of a solution for all these other teams that are in states where those restrictions haven't been lifted. So some kind of a solution. If not, then if you're Adam Silver, then you got to delay some of those restrictions for the other teams because at the end of the day, all you're trying to do is make this a competitive, make the competition balanced out all the way through. Don't miss episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance this Sunday, 6 p.m. on ESPN and streaming live on the ESPN app. If you missed episodes 1 through 4, you could stream them now with ESPN On Demand and on the ESPN app. Coming up next, we got Halftime. Jesse and Curtis will hop in. Appreciate you guys all tuning in. Stay right here. This is The Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Listen, Jess, I just want to kind of throw this out there because I know that sometimes there's kind of an order of how we do things. Curtis sent me a text and he just basically said, Sliwa, I'm going first. I don't care what Jesse says. I don't care what you say. That's what he told me. So I'm just kind of throwing that out there. Curtis, listen, I don't want to take up any more of your time. So please, Curtis, why don't you get things started?
Well, firstly, good job stealing what.
And Jess, real quick, what he also said was that his goes for about 12 to 15 minutes. So just a heads up on that. Go ahead, Curtis.
I might have to change my topic.
I was going to say, good job in stealing Mace's bit for you and Crosstalk.
By the way, you know what's funny? One time I actually texted him. I said, "This, I got the best bit coming up ever." And I don't know how he promoted it. And then when I went on, like they were actually really expecting something. I was like, I was kidding, guys. I was kidding. Like I didn't really have a bit. But that's Mason setting it up for me. Okay, go ahead, Jess. Or go ahead, Curtis. Don't buy time here, Curtis.
All right, speaking of not being prepared, Alan, have you ever had plenty of time to prepare for something and you just don't do it until the last minute?
Yes. I would say all of college, most of high school, a lot of my job.
So that got me thinking, what's the worst case of procrastination that you can remember you had? This goes for both you guys.
Worst case of procrastination.
Mine was all my college career.
Yeah, college, I wasn't good at that. I was not smart about that. You know what, actually, I'll tell you what I used to do. What I used to do in high school, me and my buddy had this, just like idiots, when finals came around, I mean, I can't tell you how last second we would wait. And I remember this time. He was coming over so we could study. I forget what, maybe it was science. I don't know what subject it was, right? And instead of us studying, we turned on the TV and guess what program was on? Like think of what somebody in high school would, What would you say somebody in high school should be watching? What are they typically watching in high school?
I'm
you say like MTV or like, you know, like those are the things that you're watching, right?
Yeah.
I think back in the day, I think you know, MTV would have been would have been one of them.
Yeah, MTV,
VH1. Yep.
Definitely. Uh-huh.
They used to play music videos, right?
That's yeah, how about that when they actually used to play music? Jess, we straight up threw on National Geographic and we were just watching like animal documentaries and just sitting there. And we're like, yeah, you know, what are you going to do? Sometimes you study for finals. Sometimes you don't have time. We watch animal documentaries. So if there's anything I procrastinated more with, definitely school. Bro, I procrastinate all the time on that stuff. What about you, Jess?
So I always procrastinate on everything. Even when I tell myself not to, I always do. I'm just real bad with that. It got better as I progressively went through college because I realized that, oh yeah, hey, my grades take a hit. So, but the worst one of procrastination.
But you're good with the show. You're good with the show. You're always solid on putting stuff together. I feel like.
Yeah, because I learned the hard way.
I feel like with the show, that isn't the case. Curtis, we'll talk about you in a second. Go ahead, Jess.
Yeah, like I said, I had to learn the hard way, you know. So, it was my first year of college. I went through high school pretty easily. I didn't really struggle or anything. I kept up with my work. I wouldn't say I did it outright, but I kept up with it to make sure I didn't have to – I was going to graduate basically. Mm-hmm. So, it comes to my first class in college, and it was a radio class. And I didn't really understand the concept of finals at that point. Mm-hmm. Because I was just more used to like, all right, the teacher assigns something and I do it. And it was like a take home final, but a create your own project final. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I'm not used to like doing stuff on my own. So I never even did it. I didn't even bother with it up until like the day for the last class came. And the teacher is like, all right, Justin, where's your final? And I'm like, I didn't do it.
That's not a good look. That's not a good look. By the way,
not a Curtis, good look at all.
I have to pay respects.
Curtis, for you procrastinating on halftime and then making this your halftime question, that's kind of a strike of genius right there. That's a solid piece
that's
of work.
That's meta right there.
Yeah, well, to be completely honest, I've always been like that as long as I could remember, procrastination. And it wasn't the fact that I just didn't want to do it. Sometimes, like in high school specifically, I knew like I was smart or whatever, and I thought, "Oh, I'm good."
You can get away with it.
Yeah, and yeah, it's like it's not the best way to learn, obviously.
No, but I know what you're saying. If you feel like you can get away with it, you're gonna try and get away with it.
Yeah, I kind of thrive in that sometimes because I mean, I remember doing a whole like 5-minute speech in front of the class that you're supposed to practice for like 2 months or whatever to go do, and I made it up. Like I do that all the time, and it's like, almost. That extra pressure sometimes makes me like do it better than if I
makes
planned
you deliver.
It out.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know.
I got you.
There are definitely people like that. Yeah, I've definitely had moments of like that where either I didn't prepare enough or I prepared like super last minute, and I just at the end I'm like, whatever. I'm just, you know, F it. We'll do it live, and I go up there and I just do it. Especially
but
towards
you can...
the end of. My college career, I felt like a lot of people were really anxious to like talk in front of groups. So whenever I got put into a group project, I was always the person who had to do the talking.
Hmm. But you could easily over prepare. You know, like there are times. I'll use as an example. Sometimes there's, you know, I could prepare for a segment and you put too much into your head. Like you're like, how are you going to relay all this out? And then there's other times where. You almost kind of just go with the flow and just very naturally a good conversation comes out or a good topic comes out of it. So you can easily over-prepare. And Curtis, I think it's safe to say you did not do that, but you danced and you freaking found a way. That's all that matters.
Once a procrastinator, always a procrastinator. It's only a matter of how late did you wait. It's never doing it on time for me.
That's awesome.
Not bad.
Okay, Jess, what do you got over there?
All right, so... Did you guys hear what happened to Nick Young, also known as Swaggy P, today?
I saw Nick Young's tweet. Tell those who didn't get a chance to see it.
Yes. Yeah, so this is Nick Young, Swaggy P, earlier today. I almost killed at JaVale McGee just now. What are the odds we almost hit each other driving? I'm ready to cuss someone out in full road rage mode. He rolled down his window. It's JaVale, man. WTF. We just started laughing. Damn, I wish he could have hit me. I need some cash.
You got that's very Dick Young right there, by the way. He got some good love. He got some good love on that tweet. There were a lot of people that responded to that.
But in just thinking of that, I'm going back into my head, you know, for the most part, I consider myself a pretty patient driver. Mm-hmm. However, if I'm alone in the car, forget about it. Everything just unleashes.
Everything's fair game.
Yeah. And I've heard that from like many people. Kevin Smith, the director, I've heard he's the same way on like different podcasts. He's the nicest guy to ever meet. But no matter what, just don't get into a car with him because that's where all the rage is pointed to when you're in a car by yourself. I mean, obviously now we're not getting a lot of that because there's not a lot of cars in the traffic, but I remember there was times where it would just want to rip my hair out in traffic. So I asked you both, you guys, what is one moment you can remember when you have really terrible, bad moment of road rage?
Well, Curtis flipped me off one time in the parking garage, Jess.
That was a thumbs up.
It was a thumbs up, but it was with the other finger. You know what it is for me? It's kind of funny. I don't really have road rage, but look, don't get me wrong. Like, you definitely get ticked off. You know what kind of is a pet peeve of mine? People speeding. Like, are you ever just on the road? You're going 70, 75, you know, you're on the freeway, and someone just freaking 95 miles an hour just blows by you. I'll tell you what bothers me about that more than anything. If they obviously don't care about their own safety, all good. But man, all it takes is if somebody's not looking for just one quick second and they, you know, signal to go into another lane, that's all it takes. It's like if you don't care about yourself, that's one thing. But bro, how many times do you see these there's cars and sometimes they'll be like racing each other and they're swerving through lanes, and especially here in LA. I mean, how dangerous is that? So if I have one pet peeve, you know what I actually do, and I do this and I have no problem doing it. I will, if I see them coming behind me and they're speeding, I start honking before they even get past me, and then I'm honking all the way through. I'm honking all the way through as they're driving by me. And every once in a while, you get someone that like will hit their brakes, like, okay, I shouldn't do that. But for the most part, they're not paying attention. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Or you get the angry guy that then takes that as a challenge and then tries to brake check you, because the drivers that do that usually end up doing that as well.
Which I'm all good with. Like, if I get the brake check and we're now going slower than we were, I'm like, cool. I'm happy to wave at him and say, you know what, mission accomplished. But, bro, I mean, it's just so freaking careless and dumb. Easily going 95, and there's cars all over the place. They're swerving around. That's probably my pet peeve in driving, is when I see that.
So yes, funny you mentioned that. That exact thing happened to me in October. But so it was on the 110 off ramp in downtown, going from the 10 eastbound going to the 110 northbound. And, you know, there's always traffic at there, or at least there used to always be traffic there. And I was stopped, completely stopped. I was fine. And all of a sudden I hear, and I just look up at my window, quick second, and I see the car behind me just shoot forward and hit me in the back. And Jesus. I got rear-ended. Yeah, it wasn't that bad, but it was a 5-car pileup because of one car that clearly was not paying attention and going super fast and crashed into one car, and it ricocheted into 4 other cars. Luckily, my car was one of the least damaged ones, but it was still like, you know, one of those moments you said, it's like, dude, you're going 80 on the freeway, on a congested freeway, and you're not.
Bro, the way they're weaving around cars, the way they're riding other people. I mean, by the way, somebody right now is in their car doing it. Like, yeah, for sure, Al. For sure. As they're
zooming. As they're flipping zooming off the diving. Stereo as you're.
I was like, yo, yeah, Al, check this out.
They're zooming at 90. Curtis, do you have any road rage on the road?
Well, before I worked here, I didn't really have as big of a commute, so.
Oh yeah, that's not easy, bro. 2 hours on the road, that will drive you crazy.
Yeah, and I got kind of used to it, and there was a point though where, I kind of had to tell myself, there's no point in getting mad at this traffic because it's going to keep happening, and you mm-hmm. being mad is not going to do anything about it. But when you brought up the speeding and the, you know, the people that carelessly drive like that, I had some dude try and race me on the way home last night. Just because.
What?
So I don't even have a race car. I've got a Focus. Yeah, it's a little loud because it's got like an exhaust and stuff. But this guy tries to pull. He pulls up next to me. It's mm-hmm. a freaking Tesla. Guy's revving, and he's trying to race me. And then, you know, he just speeds off, and I'm just like, "You're an idiot." And then, like half a mile down, there was an accident across the whole freeway. It wasn't because of him, but I'm not surprised if he was had a hand in it with that driving.
Hmm.
I
don't get it. Yeah, I just don't get it. Like, I honestly don't get the whole. By the way, it's just not me. Like, I'm also not a car guy. I'm also not a, oh my gosh, I got to go get this car because it has this much horsepower. And there's other people that understand that. And that's, I'm sure, you know, there's definitely an art to whatever it is that they like, whether it's the engine, whether it's the details that go into building engines. Like, it's just not for me. But the car, the speeding stuff, I feel like that's like a culture, right? And I don't even know what that culture is, but that just never was for me. I never understood it. Like, somebody pulling up next to you and wanting to race you, like, I don't get it. I just don't get it.
And it's just like, and it's not even a real car enthusiast will go get a nice car and race it on a track where you're allowed to do it, because there's plenty mm-hmm. of those around. But mm-hmm. it's a different kind of person that does that. Going, you know, tries to go 100 on a freeway for no reason, especially now when we barely have traffic as it is, and mm-hmm. people are still driving like morons.
Okay, I got one for you guys. We obviously are all talking about The Last Dance. We're all spending a lot of time on, you know, during the week, just kind of getting a chance to listen to what Isaiah said, what James Worthy said. Worthy on, obviously. What was that? Yesterday, Worthy had his own opinion on it. I want to read a tweet out to you guys from Giannis Antetokounmpo. He said,
Giannis.
My MJ takeaway from the Last Dance documentary is that chasing greatness is a life mission. Okay, so this is what I want to ask you guys, because when I did that post show with Sedano after The Last Dance, one of the things I mentioned that I love about this is there's a lot of younger people that never got to see Mike. Right? Like, they weren't watching him in the 90s win 6 NBA championships. They weren't watching him in the 80s trying to get to that point. And it's great for people who are under the age of 30 years old, under the age of 25, under 20, because I think you're getting a sneak peek to just how unbelievable Michael Jordan was. So Giannis is a good example. What is he, 25 years old or somewhere around that age? That's a perfect example of somebody getting a chance to watch just somebody in their at their absolute best. So here's a question I got for you guys. Jess, I'll go with you. Think of if you can go back and watch one player like grow up in that era and see that athlete in his prime or her prime, who would it be? Do you have somebody in mind, Jess? Curtis, think of one as well.
I have a couple just mm-hmm. because it's hard for me to pinpoint. So I'm going to go both football, basketball and baseball, because I have three specific ones for each one. First, I'll go mm-hmm. basketball. Of course, I kind of struggled because it's either Jerry West or it's Magic.
Hmm.
But because you can't really go wrong with either one of those two, but it's just two completely different eras. Like, I feel that
I'm surprised you said Jerry West.
Well, because that's when the NBA like really blossomed into, you know, a league, and that's where like mm-hmm. where it's the origins are. That's where like the heart of the NBA is. So I would love to see how that. And I mean, you know, you get to see Chance Will, Elgin Baylor. It's so many kind of like lost legends that don't sure. get a lot of, you know, talk about during that time. But then you're Magic, mm-hmm. Kareem, Worthy. You know, there's just even more. So it's really hard to choose. But it would be one of those two for sure when it comes to basketball. When it comes to football. Since I'm a Niner fan, 100% going back to Jerry Rice and Joe Montana.
Yeah,
That combination, those late 80s, mm-hmm. just because, you know, it's at that point, before Tom Brady, I always thought Joe Montana was the GOAT.
Sure.
You could
and you
talk
should.
To me. Yeah. GOAT, hands down. It wasn't until I saw Tom Brady come back on the Falcons that won you a Super Bowl, I said, that's it. Tom Brady's a GOAT. Football's over. Mm. I'm done. Mm. But that would be for football. And for baseball, I would go back to when Fernando Mania was a thing. Because that's when my
Fernando
dad...
Fernando Valenzuela, yep.
Fernando Valenzuela. Because that's when my dad became a fan. And that's essentially how I became a fan. Because my dad would listen to Jaime Harin on the radio.
When did he get... What Fernando was, what, 82 or something like that?
81? In the early 80s, yeah.
Because he came in, even his rookie year, I think he came in, took, you know, obviously took the league by storm. And I think they won, didn't Dodgers win his rookie year?
I don't know if they remember if they won his rookie year, but I know he won
rookie
MVP
of the year
Cy Young and rookie of the year. Cy Young and rookie of the year in that year.
The freaking man right there.
Yeah, that, I mean,
that's a great one. That's a great one.
Oh, yeah.
Like Fernando Valenzuela. That's a culture shift too. Like that's a movement, you know, like that's like you were saying magic. Like that's one that like kind of, I mean, just put the league on the map. Now that baseball was already popular, but that was a big one, especially on a local level as well.
Yeah. Like my first taste into Dodger baseball in LA wasn't even with Vin Scully. It was Jaime Harin on KWKW. I think it was 1313 at that time. I would listen to all the games in Spanish because of my dad. I would switch back and forth when he wasn't in the car to Vin Scully. But, you know, my first memory is hearing Jaime Harin on the radio.
All right, Curtis, what player would you want to go back to and watch in their prime?
Well, it's really lame. I was going to say I'm really glad with all this coming out with MJ because since I started watching basketball late, I barely watched much of Michael Jordan because, you know, I'm 28.
By the way, that's a great answer.
And the first thing I knew him from was Space Jam before I knew like I knew he was a basketball player. But the earliest memory I have is Space Jam. And even then, I didn't start watching actual NBA basketball until high school, you know.
Well, if your memory of Michael Jordan is Space Jam, I'm very happy you're watching this documentary because, damn, was Michael Jordan the man. And just like, look at this documentary. For those who were, you know, too young to see Jordan in his prime and winning those championships, how ridiculous was Michael? Like, how stupid are those highlights? Like, how amazing was he in that game against the Boston Celtics where he puts up 63 points? His just highlight reel after highlight reel, his shot over Elo, like, everything that he accomplished even before he won a championship was amazing. So I think Jordan's a great pick. You know where I'm going? I'm going back. I think one athlete would have been so cool to be just kind of in that generation, in that era, and just see him from start to finish. Muhammad Ali. Like how amazing would that have been to listen to Ali with the press? Listen to how cocky and confident Ali was. Listen to Ali from a political perspective saying, no, I'm not going to go fight in no war that I don't believe in. I'm not going to go fight and you know, kill strangers or whatever the case is. I got enough issues in my own country. And then eventually go to jail, come out of jail, you know, had his boxing license revoked. And then eventually get it back, goes back, and that's when, you know, he beats George Foreman. He goes and has those classic fights versus Frazier, Ali Frazier. Like, how cool would have that been to been around that? Because I know anytime I talk sports with Michael Thompson, man, there's many a times that he goes back to boxing and he talks about Muhammad Ali and he compares players.
That's one of his go-tos. Yep.
It's one of his go-tos. And, Jess, he compares players to today and he's like, you think Ali would have just sat back there and not said anything? Like, he says it made the sport more exciting because there was more of that trash talk. There was that confidence and that cockiness. That'd have been a cool era to see Ali doing what he was doing back in the day.
Definitely.
All right, so we have. I was gonna see if I had other players in other sports, but I'm like, nah, that's good enough. Ali is good enough right there. Okay, let's do this when we come back. So I promoted this. I mentioned it a little bit earlier. Estevan Oriol, Steve-O as they call him, part of LA Originals, which is on Netflix. He's coming up around right at 8:30 or so. We come back. I want to talk a little bit about the documentary, part of the reason why we're going out of the sports world here for a quick second. We'll do that when we come back. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
If you ain't got tatted by Cartoon, you ain't got no tat. If you ain't get shot by Esteban, you got a weak photography.
Yo, kick it off, dog.
Hip-hop culture owes so much to Toons and Esteban.
Cartoon, baby.
I'm a boy Cartoon.
Cartoon.
Everything Cartoon did, Esteban was there.
Capturing the whole culture.
Lowrider culture, tattoo culture.
Everything, man.
I'm a photographer and director, raised in L.A. Hip-hop was new. I'm on tour with the Beastie Boys, No Doubt, the Fugees, Limp Bizkit.
And I'm the only one there with a camera.
It is a buddy comedy.
And the more we hung out, the more we just started building on ideas of things that we could do to make money that weren't illegal.
We looked at each other and we were like, we need to go to the next level, man.
And they grew that empire, Soul Assassin Studios.
Just happened.
These dudes are like Cholo Da Vinci's.
They've been unstoppable ever since.
They paved the way for a lot of people.
Now you have a new wave of Chicano artists that can focus on Chicano pride.
They are LA.
The LA originals on Netflix right now. Esteban Oriol coming up here in just a few minutes. What a cool documentary. What a great documentary. If you guys don't know the history of it, I'll be able to kind of just give a quick little background. So Esteban is known for his photography back in really the 90s. And they just kind of created a culture, him and Cartoon, which Cartoon will probably come up on Tuesdays when we're going to have him on. But created a culture of Los Angeles. And there are some iconic shots of L.A., that I feel like has kind of represented Los Angeles, but it's gone worldwide. It's a great documentary, and it's a great piece that if you're somebody that's born and raised in L.A., you don't have to be born and raised in L.A. to enjoy this or appreciate this documentary, but I definitely think you will. Jesse, when did you watch it? What did you watch it like?
Just couple over the weekend. Over the weekend.
Just a cool way of kind of seeing LA in a completely different light, and two guys that have a big part to do with this culture that you really, I don't know, maybe just don't know the background of. I didn't know the background of it, so I felt like I learned a lot from it. LA Originals, by the way, is what it's called.
Yeah, that's the culture I grew up in. I grew up in Northeast LA. I grew up not far from downtown and all the places that they talked about in that documentary. My brother dressed like them. My mom wouldn't allow me to wear Dickies for the longest because, it was that connotation of that image of like a cholo gangster kind of thing when, that's just how they dressed. It meant nothing. Like, it's fashion. It's what it was. So it took her a long time to get over that. But I saw that growing up. So watching it just kind of took me back to as a child. And, I saw all this kind of happen, but I didn't know it was happening with like these guys in the background. And that's what I love about it. It's like, I love the stories of the people in the background that just kind of make things happen that you don't know about.
Well, it's also too, and I think this is what's unique about it. It's it kind of paints a picture of LA, and it's a culture that started back in the days, but still kind of rings on. Plus, I love their stories because they, it's not like they came from something or they had all this money before. No. They just, by their own passion, just kind of found their own path to success. Esteban Oriol, Steve-O, part of LA Originals on Netflix. He's coming up next. Stay right here. This is The Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right. So we'll soon get a chance to talk to photographer Esteban Oriol. Just a great documentary, LA Originals. I'll give everybody just a little bit of background. So him and artist Mr. Cartoon turned their Chicano roots into gritty art impacting street culture, hip hop, and beyond. It's interesting because when I watched this documentary, and Jess did a great job of, obviously finding the right contacts and get an opportunity to talk to some of those that, obviously made this documentary happen, or it's based on them. But I go back because I was a hip hop fan, and still am, but really more it's kind of the old hip hop. But the hip hop that they were around back in the 90s is more of the hip hop that I was accustomed to listening to. And I really, you know, it's the Eminem, obviously, it's Dr. Dre, it's Snoop Dogg. But the documentary highlights so much interaction with these unbelievable hip hop artists. And the photographs that Estevan is taking in these really unbelievable concerts where nobody else is there. There's no other photographers. I'll just use as an example. He talks about, remember when Limp Bizkit was at its absolute peak? He was going on tours with Limp Bizkit, Blink 182, Cypress Hill, obviously, Eminem, Exhibit, Method Man. I mean, just some of these, Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, these iconic hip hop artists or artists even in other genres. And I don't want to say it was just at the right place at the right time, but had a way of taking photos, had a way of telling a story by taking a photo. That's, you know, that's an art in itself. And Mr. Cartoon, which we'll talk to next week, it was it's fascinating because a lot of the artwork that he was doing on, you know, these hip hop artists, and I'm talking about specific tattoos, the artwork that he was doing on a lot of these hip hop artists, or then eventually even athletes. And then celebrities, there's Estevan Oriol taking photos of him putting the tattoos, these iconic tattoos on these great hip hop artists and, you know, different artists. It's just, it's a unique story. And it just, the story of how it kind of intertwines into LA, that iconic LA where, you know, somebody's holding up an L and an A and you see all that merchandising everywhere and you see that promoted everywhere. That was a photo that, you know, he took back in the 90s that, you know, obviously really exploded, and now you see it all the time. I could never have, for those who are born and raised in LA, I'm obviously, and I've said this before, I'm born and raised in San Diego. My real connection to Los Angeles, I mean, granted, I've been here for 10 years, is I grew up a Los Angeles Laker fan. And the entire time that I've been in LA, you know, it makes you feel like you are home because you have such a connection with LA and you get the opportunity to do these shows and from a sports perspective. But there is there's a history to Los Angeles that you can learn about, and there's a culture that you can hear about here, get yourself familiar with here in Los Angeles, specifically because of documentaries like this. So we're still waiting to get Estevan Oriol. Hopefully we still do get a chance to have him on, but we'll keep you posted. When he does come on, we'll get into that documentary. So I don't know if you guys saw this. Part of this, I guess you could say, confuses me a little bit. Isaiah Thomas has been getting a lot of pub this last week or so. And he's been getting pub because the documentary, The Last Dance, I mean, I don't know if the idea was that he'd be getting this much publicity. Why would Isaiah Thomas get this much publicity when the documentary is about Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls? But the reality is that has definitely been the case coming out of these first couple of shows or these first four episodes. So I don't know when Isaiah was asked this, but I'm going to go ahead and just pass the information on. And I think sometimes in times like this, you ever have like a grudge against somebody, and whether you think this is right or whether you think this is wrong, but just because you have a grudge on somebody, you will never kind of give somebody the credit that they deserve. And I think that's Isaiah Thomas with Michael right now. I don't know why there is this bitterness, but I do feel like there's definitely some type of bitterness with Isaiah Thomas and Michael Jordan. I'll tell you what I'm talking about right here. So I'm going to read this off to you. Isaiah Thomas was interviewed, and this was a piece, a writer's piece. And he said, when you put Jordan and his basketball team in the 80s, they weren't a very successful team. They just weren't. When you talk about Jordan and his team dominating, they dominated the 90s. But when you put him down with the Lakers teams and those Pistons teams and those Celtics teams, they all beat them. They just did. What separated Jordan from all of us was he was the first one to three-peat, but he didn't three-peat against Magic, Larry, and Dr. J. So why do I set that up that way? Isaiah Thomas listed his top five players, and this was his top five players in order. He put Julius Erving at number five. Okay, nothing wrong with that. Dr. J, a unbelievable player. And I will say that I didn't get a chance to, you know, obviously watch him on a night in, night out basis, but he puts Dr. J at number five. I'm going to skip number four for a second. He puts Magic Johnson at number three. He puts Larry Bird at number two, and he puts Kareem Abdul-Jabbar at number one. So most would look at that list and say, wow, Hall of Famers. Those are unbelievable players. Michael Jordan, he put down at four. I don't think anybody who loves the NBA, loves basketball, who's kind of a historian of the game as well, that respects all the players that have been in the league, I don't think anybody has Michael Jordan that far down on the list. But I will tell you this. Isaiah has got an opportunity to play against some of these guys. He played against Kareem, played against Bird, played against Magic, played against Jordan, and played against Julius Erving. So if he puts his top five list together and he puts Michael Jordan at four, okay, you know what? He got a chance to play against all these players. Maybe he saw something that you and I didn't. But I'll say this. You know when you just know somebody is making a decision, not because of, you know, the talent of somebody else. They're just doing it because they just have some type of animosity towards another player. If that's not Isaiah Thomas, I just have no idea what animosity is, unless Isaiah Thomas isn't that perfect example. You know what I mean? Like, you look at certain players and you look at, you know, some of their accomplishments. Isaiah Thomas just feels like he's got something against Michael Jordan. I felt like Jordan was being a little bit childish in that Last Dance documentary, saying, you know, he should have shook my hand, he should have this. He should have. But Jordan, don't even pay attention to this guy. You're Michael Jordan. You don't have to. And then you kind of see the run that Isaiah's been getting all week long. He's been getting a ton of run, and part of this run, I think, will continue. He ranks Michael Jordan at number four. So there you have it right there. All right, more of the Sliwa Show coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Curtis, you feeling this music right here?
Oh, yeah. I love Revolution. Revolution, yeah. I've been listening to for years.
Revolution and Tribal Seas. Both are great. Both are fantastic. You know, I've never actually seen Tribal Seas. I always wanted to see live. I just, I don't know. I just never did. But obviously in L.A., Orange County, Santa Barbara, San Diego, they perform. I just haven't got a chance to see them.
I didn't realize they had a song with your guy Protege too. He's featured on a couple of them. So
yeah. There's different kinds of reggae. There's different types of reggae, and actually, I think there's definitely a Cali reggae. You know, like they have their own style of reggae, and then there's the Jamaican reggae. There's African type of reggae. So it's different styles of reggae. So. There's, you know, we've got to hit on this a couple times. By the way, just a quick update. Estevan Oriel, the LA Originals, working on it. If we can't get him tonight, we'll try and get him soon. So we're still working on that front. LA Times says UCLA fans will be allowed back into the Rose Bowl someday, but who will go? You know, that's something Ireland and BK and I were talking about at Crosstalk today. Mason took the day off. He broke his Cal Ripken streak of most consecutive days working. This is a conversation that I think a lot of people are still trying to figure out. Look, eventually we're going to have sports back in arenas. Eventually you and I are going to be at Staples Center again. We're going to be watching the Lakers game. Eventually SoFi Stadium will be opened up. I got actually a great SoFi story. I'll tell that story in a second. But there's eventually SoFi will be opened up, and we'll get a chance to watch a Rams game or a Chargers game. Or if you're the Chargers, the opposing team, you'll go watch their team play. But there is that's going to eventually happen. But it's going to take time. Like for all consumers, this specific article, who will go? Think about the Rose Bowl specifically. I've been at the Rose Bowl, so I remember going one time back when I think I was in college. I came up here. I had a friend of mine that went to UCLA, and I went when it was Deshaun Foster was the running back for UCLA, and I think UCLA at the time was ranked like top five in the country, and the Rose Bowl was rocking. You know, everybody was there. I've been to the Rose Bowl when it was – they've had some huge international soccer matches over the last like 5 years. I think one of the matches – definitely I went to a Manchester United game. What's the other one I went to? I think it was Manchester United versus Galaxy was one of the games. And I'm trying to think who the other team was. It could might have actually been Barcelona-Real Madrid. I think – literally, I think
it was
that.
Pretty sure that's who it was.
I think it was, right? The Barcelona-Real Madrid. So just – I mean, that stadium, when it's absolutely full, doesn't get anything but nothing is better than a packed stadium like that. Okay, well, you would feel comfortable going into a stadium like that? When you look at college football, and I know college football, it's a little bit further down the road, and they're going to have some time to try and figure stuff out. But I think from a fan perspective, that fan experience is going to be a lot different. Think about college football. You can easily pack 80, 90, 100,000 people. It's Texas, it's Ohio State, it's Wisconsin, it's Michigan, it's, you know, Alabama, LSU, Clemson. It's all these schools where that area of the country lives, breathes, and dies college football. Now, I'm not underestimating how big SC and UCLA here is, you know, obviously in Los Angeles, but there's, I think there's different levels. What I mean by levels is certain parts of the country, that's their only priority, and that's their number one priority. Where here in LA, Lakers, Dodgers, I mean, we have fan bases for every sport and every team. It's going to take time. So when I read this article, and this is by Ben Bulch, the staff writer for UCLA, it's going to take time. There's a financial consultant who says, I would have no problem going to watch a game when the season starts. I'm not one of those people. You know, I definitely, for me, it's going to take a ton of time to get into arenas that are that big. I don't even have to look at arenas. Restaurants is going to be completely different. You know, I'm not going to just incorporate this just because I know it's a different conversation, but you guys hear me endorse Brad Wallace of the Wallace Firm, and I had a conversation with him today. I'm always curious about like how some of these industries are doing. And this was part of the conversation we're having. Part of the conversation we're having is every business, when they come back, they got to do it differently. I mentioned it earlier this week. I went and did St. Francis Center. I do some work at. I had my shoes disinfected when I walked in. I had gloves on, a mask, and my temperature was taken. That's the freaking norm, right? And then it was the whole social distancing and everything else. That's the norm. I mean, that is going to eventually, at some point, that, you know, you have to imagine like, okay, in the next 2 years, are we now in a different position where we don't have to worry about this anymore? Hopefully that's the case. But at least for the near future, that's the norm. The thing that I get most fascinated about is how every industry and business, how they're just going to adjust. Movie theater, how is it going to be different? Restaurants. What do you do at the bar for a restaurant? And I'm talking about the physical bar, as in, you know, you could say, you know what, we'll go up, we'll sit up at the bar, we'll have dinner. Or I'm just going to grab a glass of wine, and you got shoulder to shoulder at a lot of these restaurants. Or you just go sit, and it's just casual dining. And how are you going to, you have to take tables out. Here's another industry that's fascinating to me. What's Vegas going to do? How is Vegas going to follow these guidelines? And even when they do follow the guidelines, what percentage of consumers are comfortable going back to those hotels and saying, no, I'm good. Go to a hotel. I'm going to get down the strip. I'm going to walk the strip. I'm going to go into those pools. I'm going to go do some shopping. Then I'm going to hit the buffet up. I mean, like all of that stuff. There's so many question marks that remain with each one of these industries. There is a curiosity to see how things unfold over the next couple months or so. There's a curiosity to see that if a consumer's confidence is going to be something that changes overnight, or it's going to take a ton of time for it to change. So I mentioned I got this story for SoFi. So over the weekend, if you guys remember, the last couple of weeks, anytime, you know, something comes out about SoFi, I'm always, okay, well, what's the progress that they're doing? How are things going there? You have 3,000 plus workers. It is considered essential in the state of California, essential. So that's one of those jobs that can continue even under this pandemic, under this quarantine. So I have kind of asked the question, and Lindsay Theory, I asked the question to her during Crosstalk with Mesa in Ireland about how are things going there? How are the safety precautions that they're taking? And I got this guy hit me up with an email over the weekend, and I'm not going to give out his name or anything, but he did mention that he does a lot of the painting over at SoFi Stadium, and he said he wanted to offer some info on the work going on there dealing with COVID-19. So they have over 3,000 workers. They've obviously had a couple cases of coronavirus. He said that the stadium implemented mandatory temperature screening, mandatory masks, gloves, and 6 feet of separation. For the most part, he just said that they have taken an extreme amount of caution on making sure all their workers were safe. So I appreciate him sending me that email, because this is somebody, first of all, he doesn't have to do it, but obviously a listener to the show, he did it, and it gives me some insight. You know, it makes me feel better about, okay, well, SoFi is doing the right thing. Here's this construction that's going on. Here's almost $5 billion that's pumped into, you know, SoFi Stadium. And we're sitting here in this position, and it's great. I mean, absolutely great to see that somebody goes out of their way to basically say, hey, all is good on our front. We're actually doing pretty good. We're working. We feel safe. So that's nice to hear. You want to hear things like that. When will the Rose Bowl be packed again? When will we go back? Nobody's got any answers. The NBA, this was kind of I don't want to use the word big day in the NBA, but there was some information that came out today. Commissioner Adam Silver, he had mentioned a while back that April 1st was going to be the next time that they kind of address what's going on. So they meet with their board of governors. And this is what was announced today. Adrian Wojnarowski put out a tweet. NBA postponed the May draft lottery and the combine today. So sources tell ESPN, as Woj breaks news, as he always does, him and Shams just dominating on that front. Not obviously surprised, the lottery, the combine, it's impossible to execute that and do it. There's no need to do it. The next thing I'm going to tell you that will happen will be the NBA draft. That's set for June 25th. Of course, that will be canceled as well. All these things will happen, but they're either going to happen after it's solidified of when the NBA is going to finish off their season, or they're going to happen simply because the season's not going to happen, and now they know that, okay, now we could go through with the lottery, we can go through with the combine, and then we could eventually do the NBA draft. So those will happen, but they're going to happen in due time. I thought the other big news that came down today was the big conversation is delaying the 2020-2021 season until December. So that's obviously big news right there, because this has nothing to do with completing this season. This is just kind of on its own. The NBA is strongly considering, no matter what happens, whether they get to finish their season or they don't, that the season is next season is still played in December. So we'll kind of see how that goes. I'm a fan of the playing in December. I'm a big fan of that. I think that's I think you could catch a lot of NBA fans who are very, very casual. You can catch a much bigger audience by doing that, because, you know, big fans like myself are always going to be there. Okay, another strong week. Greatly appreciate everybody that tuned in. If you miss any part of the show, you can download it on the ESPN app or on iTunes. Thank you to Jesse. Thank you to Curtis. All the guests that we've had on also this entire week, always greatly appreciated. We're back on Monday. Lakers talk starting at 6:30. Have a great weekend, LA.